Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Karen Cannon. Welcome to the Law of Attraction in Love radio show. I'm very excited today because we are going to hear from my colleague, friend, and personal coach, Dr. Deborah Annapol. She is a relationship coach, psychologist, and author of the books Seven Natural Laws of Love and Love Without Limits. I have to tell you, when I was separating from my husband years ago, it was a very difficult transition for me. I grew up in a family where we were not basically allowed, you know, to even think of divorce. I grew up in a very conservative Catholic family, and also the Asian culture frowns upon divorce. And so when I was entertaining divorce, it was extremely difficult for me, and I needed some support. And Dr. Annapol was one of those important people in my life that really helped me through that transition, helped me become more aware of myself and my needs, and also my needs in terms of love and passion and connection. So she's a very, very important person in my life, and I'm so pleased that before she flies out of the country, that I caught her and we have her on the line today to help all of you in your relationship questions. So without further ado, I'm going to see if Dr. Deborah is on the line. Deborah, are you there? Let's see here. Oh, we got some technical difficulties here. Let me see if I can get this. And if I hang up on you, I have to have you call me back. All right. Well, in the meantime, while I'm fiddling around with the technical here, if you want to call us live on the show and have Dr. Deborah answer your questions live, the call-in number is 347-945-6313. Again, the number is 347-945-6313. We're going to first talk to Dr. Deborah about her amazing books, and I've read both of them, Love Without Limits and also The Seven Natural Laws of Love, and there is a chapter in The Seven Natural Laws of Love on the Law of Attraction and Love, so hopefully we can get some of that information from Dr. Deborah today. Well, I am having difficulty unmuting her phone line, so I'm going to ask Dr. Deborah if she can hear me to hang up and call back, so we'll try it that way. And I think it's actually my internet connection here that's kind of a little bit frozen. So like I was saying, Dr. Deborah was a very important part of my relationship and the transition between being a monogamous partner in a long-term marriage to being single again after all those years. And it was very, very helpful for me, because my family structure was such that, you know, you really didn't talk about things, especially after divorce. My parents were extremely unhappy with me and felt that that I basically ruined my life if I got a divorce. And luckily, I listened to my own spirit and listened to my own inner intuition and voice and decided to still go for it. And then I was able to attract, when we talked about the law of attraction, I was able to attract the right people in my life to support me, and Dr. Deborah was one of these people. So we're still waiting for the internet here to reconnect, so I apologize for our technical difficulties today. Sometimes that happens, and it's like going with the flow. So let's see if we can get the screen rebooted here. Okay, I'm still not able to call that number, so I'm going to actually go ahead and call her number and see if I can get her to call back. Hang on just a minute, folks. Thanks so much. Hi, can you hear me? Ah. Well, let's have you try to call back on that line, and because I think I need to have the line hung up and then have you call back on that line. Oh, you did. It must be my screen. So we're going to do this kind of, see if I can do this sort of like the less technical way, which is on speakerphone. So let me have you hang on just a sec. Okay. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. This is the non-technical way, but it'll do for now. My apologies. Anyway, welcome very much, and thank you so much for being on the show today. Yeah, you're welcome. So tell us about the seven natural laws of love. I know a lot of people aren't really aware of what these natural laws are, so if you can give us some insight into what you've written in your book, that would be really helpful.
Okay, well, the seven natural laws of love, and I want to say first of all that they're not really laws in the sense of do this or else. They're natural laws that are not invented by people. They're just the way the world works. And, you know, we have laws in the physical universe. Nobody really argues much with them, or if they do, they're considered insane. If you jump off a building, you're going to fall to the ground. It doesn't matter what your belief systems are. It doesn't matter whether you agree with gravity. It works. And so the seven natural laws of love work kind of the same way. It's not about whether you agree with them. It's simply the observations of very wise people over millennia that have noticed these things generate more love in the world, and these things make it difficult for people to experience love in the world. And so you can argue with them if you like, and no one's going to force you to observe these laws, but just the way the universe works, if you want more love in your life, it would be a good idea to pay attention to these laws. So the seven laws, just in brief, the first one is love is its own law. The second one is the law of source, which draws our attention to where love really comes from, which is inside of us, not in anyone or anything out there.
Right.
The law of attraction, which I'm sure you've talked about quite a bit, and I'll in a minute maybe say how that applies to love. The law of unity, the law of truth. And this is another one that I find people are really confused about. We think that if we speak our truth that we're risking love, but in fact, the more we dare to say what's true for us in a vulnerable, non-defensive way, the more love grows. The law of consciousness, that is, love is a state of consciousness. It's not a material object. And the law of forgiveness, which I really see forgiveness as being the key to unconditional love, because we're not perfect. We can't love perfectly all the time, no matter how much we might want to. But to the extent that we can forgive ourselves and forgive others, there's always a second chance, and we can make it a practice. So that's the brief summary.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much. And where can people find a copy of your book, The Seven Natural Laws of Love?
Well, it's available at the Love site, which is sevenlawsoflove.com. And you can also get it at any of the online bookstores. And you might possibly find it at your local bookstore, but I wouldn't count on that at all. The book industry being what it is, it's very difficult to keep books in the stores.
I understand. Well, could you give our readers and listeners a little insight into your perception of how the law of attraction works in a love relationship?
Yeah, well, the law of attraction, as it I see there are many ways that it works, but one way that's often overlooked by people is that as long as you're coming from a paradigm of dominance and submission, is one up, one down, as long as you believe that in order to be loved, you have to in some way either control the source of love or submit. Either way, it's two sides of the same coin. As long as you're caught in that way of relating, you're actually outside of love, and you're really dealing with power relationships. So it doesn't really matter whether you're in the one-up position or the one-down position. You're going to find yourself, instead of in a love relationship, in a power relationship. And this is the thing that I think so many people on some level intuit, but don't quite understand what's going on. The experience of love is one of not attempting to control or be controlled by the other.
And so if someone, I had a letter from a lady the other day, and she is in love with one of her friends, best friends, and she's currently married but also loves her husband, and she's in a quandary because she loves her husband, has two grown children, and at the same time loves this other man, and they're having a clandestine conversation about it. I mean, they aren't physically intimate, but, you know, she is both wanting to stay married to her husband but also not telling him that she's also in love with this other gentleman. So there's that element of inauthenticity or inability to tell her truth. How would you, how would this apply to a relationship like that?
Well, this has, they're all interrelated, but I'd say this is more about the law of truth than anything else. And so many people get themselves into a hole because they're trying not to hurt someone's feelings, or they're trying to protect their own access to a relationship by withholding some of the truth. And what ends up happening is sooner or later, this comes to the surface. It's felt energetically, even before it's communicated. And, it's the illusion that we're separate from each other, this would be the law of unity, allows people to even think that it's a possibility to maintain this kind of fiction. And what ends up happening is sooner or later, it's not only felt energetically, but it appears in the physical world. And at that point, the original partner feels betrayed. They've been lied to. Their trust is broken. This could all be avoided by taking the risk of sharing about it honestly in the beginning. You may be met with all kinds of negative reactions if you do that, but the negative reactions are not in the arena of you lied to me, you betrayed me, you hid this from me. And what ends up happening is the extent to which the truth and the honesty is there in the beginning will often elicit the best possible response. But there's no guarantees. You take the risk that your partner may be coming from an old paradigm of love that says, if you love someone else, you can't possibly love me. And they may withdraw. That's a possibility. And attempting to control your partner by withholding information is not going to lead to the kind of relationship that I think this woman is looking for. Now, the good news for her is that for men, they're much less likely to have an adverse reaction to an emotional affair, which is probably become so common that this word has come into use. And women, on the other hand, are much more likely to react negatively to an emotional affair than a sexual affair. This is what the research is showing. So the good news for her is that if she talks to her husband now while it's still an emotional affair, it's much more likely that he'll be able to accept it.
That's great. That's great advice. And you mentioned earlier the term, the old paradigm, and obviously there must be a new paradigm of love. So could you briefly explain what the new paradigm is versus the old?
Yeah. So the old paradigm is the one that most of us were raised in. And part of this paradigm is that the image of love is like a pie. There's a finite amount of love, and if I give you a slice, then there's less left in the pie for me. In that paradigm, of course, for your wife to love someone else, this is taking away from you. This is no good. In the new paradigm, where love is seen as a state of consciousness, a vibration, an energy, and actually the more love is shared, the more love grows. The more we expand our love, the more we're able to include within it. And so in this paradigm, if your partner loves someone else, this actually results in more love for you, not less. Now, there are other aspects of the old and the new paradigm, some of which I've touched on already. In the old paradigm, the way to have more love in your life is to be secretive and lie if necessary to make sure that no information that might upset your partner gets communicated. In the new paradigm, it's about being completely transparent and honest and trusting that from that truth, whatever needs to happen in the love relationship will happen. In other words, you're moving from control in the old paradigm to allowing in the new paradigm. It's kind of like they say in AA, trusting in a higher power.
Right, and it sounds like in the old paradigm, the thinking is more on the lines of scarcity thinking, there is not enough, rather than abundant thinking, which is what we try to teach when we talk about the law of attraction and attracting more into your life.
Right, right. Focusing on scarcity creates more scarcity. Focusing on abundance creates more abundance. And then the last important part of the new paradigm shift is from conditional to unconditional love. And there's a lot of talk about this, but I don't think too many people really take it to heart and see that in unconditional love, in the new paradigm, I love you whether you love me back. I love you no matter who else you love. I love you whether or not you do what I want you to do. Whereas in the old paradigm, and this is what most of us grew up with, love is kind of a reward for being a good boy or a good girl. And so this is a really big shift for people to make. And the thing is, you can only make the shift in yourself. You can't cause your partner to make the shift. But because of the law of attraction, you're likely to attract to yourself the type of love that predominates in you.
And what about that when people feel that they're in a partnership that no longer serves us, that can be a very painful thing to realize. Any advice you have there?
Well, again, telling the truth and realizing that whether or not you stay present in a partnership does not have to be connected with whether or not you still love your partner. So you could come from a place of total unconditional love, both for yourself and for the other, but recognizing that this is no longer serving me, and if you're really speaking the truth about why and how it's no longer serving you, if you're really speaking the truth about who you are, it's likely that your partner will reach the same conclusion.
Right, right. Exactly. I think that's what happened with my partner and I, my first husband. Now, I have to say, I mean, it wasn't easy to tell them. I literally had to manifest a physical illness in myself in order to force me into that truth, but it was such a huge relief, I think, for both of us to actually have the truth on the table.
Yeah, I say it's always better to volunteer. It's always better to choose what to follow your heart, or not just your heart, because, you know, the Hawaiians say that your heart can actually be just as misleading as your mind, and it's really your gut that you should listen to.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that.
Yes, yes.
Uh-oh.
Now, you know, the heart and the gut, of course, ideally the heart, the gut, and the mind are all aligned and, you know, there's no inner conflict. But when there is an inner conflict, when in doubt, trust your gut.
Gotcha. Any other tips you have for people on the seven natural laws of love or love without limits that you would like to share with our readers before we move on to some questions?
Yeah, the one thing I really would like to emphasize, because this is so often misunderstood about love without limits, is that the whole point is to let go of trying to control the form that a relationship takes. And so just as a lot of people are recognizing that it's not so good when people try to control nature and dominate nature, it's not so good when people try to control love and dominate love. Love is a natural force. It's much bigger than we are. And so Love Without Limits is about allowing love to flow, letting go of trying to control the form that it takes, and trusting that whatever form it shows up in, whether that's, you know, one partner for your entire life, or whether that's a series of partners, or whether that's two at the same time, love is the one that decides what shape it should take, not the personal ego. That's a hard one.
Yeah, very challenging, especially with many in the old paradigm around us.
Right, right. But this is true in so many areas of life, and what we're seeing in the country right now, and the economy, and in the political situation, is the old paradigm is failing. It's collapsing. It's not working so well. And we see this in our divorce rate is escalating, and so many people these days are having difficulty in their intimate relationships. And while it's difficult to live in the new paradigm when you're surrounded by the old, the reality is that the old is not working so well.
And so thus it's almost like all of us need to shift.
Yeah, this is what's underway. And so, as I say, it's always better to volunteer. You can hold on to the old paradigm until it completely collapses, or you can let it go more gracefully and shift into the new paradigm, even though there may be some resistance from your parents, your family, your neighbors, your spouse.
Right, exactly. Any other thoughts you'd like to share?
I'm waiting for some questions.
Okay, well, we have a bunch of questions here. The first one is from Latifa. She asks, I just broke up with my girlfriend. We are lesbians. And what bothers me is our breakup was very unpleasant. Sometimes I really want her back for good, but just as you mentioned, and she was talking about an article I wrote, we can't force things to happen even by using the law of attraction. Friends say that there is no hope at all because we broke up in a horrible manner, but how can I use the law of attraction to help me? Is it possible that both of us can be friends again?
Well, this is a perfect opportunity for the application of the law of forgiveness. And first of all, to recognize that when you forgive the other, it lets them off the hook, and that's great for them, but really you're doing it for yourself. You want to forgive so that you're not carrying around the hurt and the resentment and the anger and whatever it is. And you can't force yourself to forgive before you're ready. I find Byron Katie's work, and I can say more about that if you want me to, is a really wonderful tool for people that are trying to get to forgiveness, and really recognizes the wisdom of before you can get there, you do have to acknowledge the anger, acknowledge the complaints and the judgments and everything else. But then it's time to turn it around and see, to own your part in it, to see what you may have done that's helped to create the situation, and to forgive yourself first and then forgive the other. And if both people engage in this, sometimes it only takes one, but for sure if both people engage in this process, then you can move forward into, you know, being present with what you feel now instead of being stuck in the past, anger or fighting or whatever happened.
Right, and I totally agree. And my personal experience is that having that resentment in the background really prevents you from being fully present and authentic for a new relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, again, the Hawaiians, in their wisdom, say to forgive and not to forget is not to forgive at all. So forgiving actually means that it's finished. You never bring it up again. You know, this is what so many people do. They'll kiss and make up, but they haven't really let go of the resentment. And the very next time they get into a conflict, they're back in the past at whatever was unresolved. And this doesn't work.
No, my family was really good at that.
Yeah, a lot of families are.
It's taken a long time to reprogram myself for that one. My ex-husband would say, you know, what are you mad at? And I'd say, nothing. And then 6 weeks later, it would all come out in this big blast of, well, you didn't do this and that and this and that and this. And he goes, when was that? And I'm like, well, 6 weeks ago. You know, he's like, I don't even remember 6 weeks ago, let alone, you know, I can't believe you're still angry at that. Why didn't you tell me then? And I'm like, I didn't really have an answer, except I just held it for 6 weeks. So I had to learn out of that habit.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not surprised to hear that, because women particularly have a very strong conditioning not to directly express displeasure, let alone anger. You know, women are conditioned to keep the peace.
Right.
That's our job in a relationship, is to avoid conflict by, if you're unhappy about something, you stuff it. And that's what was necessary for survival in the patriarchal era. So now we're moving into a new paradigm of equality and partnership, but we're stuck with this old conditioning. So, you know, men can do this too, but there's a little more permission for the man to really, if he knows what he's feeling, to express it. Now, the problem for men is often that they're conditioned to, and also apparently they have less brain capacity actually for processing emotions. So for men, it's more a challenge of really knowing what they feel. For women, it's more a challenge of expressing it.
Right, and it seems like men have less of an issue with expressing anger because that's culturally allowed versus something like fear and sadness.
Exactly. And you know, what I've really found for myself lately, I missed out on a lot of that conditioning, not all of it, but a lot of the conditioning that says that women are supposed to yield to men and women are not supposed to express their anger. I missed out on that. And so as a result, my relationships with men tended to have conflict in them because I was not going to back down. And so I really felt that I needed my anger in order not to be a victim. And even though a spiritual teacher told me probably 10 years ago that there was never any reason to be angry ever, and that this was really in my way, in all kinds of ways, and my mind kind of understood what he was talking about, but emotionally I was like, I can't let go of my anger. That would make me a victim, and it's justified to be angry if someone mistreats you. And recently I've really gotten that, yeah, it's actually not ever necessary to be angry, because anger just creates more anger. And it's possible to have boundaries, express what you want and what you don't want without ever getting angry. And in fact, it's a lot more effective. So I wanted to share that whole story because trying to fake it and pretend that you're not angry when you are, which is what women have done for thousands and thousands of years, it doesn't work. And it's probably necessary to go through a period of really getting in touch with all that repressed anger before you come to the place of realizing, oh yeah, this is actually not necessary or useful.
That's great. I definitely wanted to be one of these enlightened souls that never had to feel and get in touch with my anger and get to the other side without going through the energy, and that doesn't work either. You really do have to be, you know, acknowledging it and correcting it and knowing what place it has, just, you know, trying not to be angry is still just repressing it.
Right. It actually makes you more angry, not less angry.
Right. It goes in deeper. Are you ready for the next question?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, this is from Huma, I think from India. The person I love, he got engaged to another girl. But he and I love each other very much. Due to his parental pressure, he has to get engaged. Please help me. How can I convince his parents for our marriage? Please help me.
Well, this is a little outside of my area of expertise, but the comment that I will make here is, again, one of perspective, where as a young woman, hearing about arranged marriages in other cultures, I thought, this is really awful. How can people possibly live this way? And yet, over the years, as I become more of an elder and have children of my own and grandchildren and have been through a number of relationships myself, starting to think, you know, young people are actually not very well equipped to choose an appropriate mate. This might be a better job for an older and wiser person. Now, parents are sometimes making decisions based not on wisdom, but economic or social considerations, and so, you know, they're not necessarily better equipped. But I would encourage taking another look and seeing, you know, is there something I'm overlooking here? If they're willing to have a conversation about it, talking to the parents and asking them, you know, what's behind this decision?
Right. Yeah, this is a tough situation. It's not being from that culture as well, although in China, my grandparents on my mother's side, they were married based on economics, and they fought for all, you know, 60 whatever years of their marriage, and used to run around with the cleavers when they were really young, chasing each other as teenagers. Never hurt each other, but, you know, just about. And it was just such a terrible situation. But you know what? They had some three amazing, amazing children. And if they didn't, I would not be here today. So go figure.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's a tricky one. And I would hesitate to start advising people from a culture that I don't understand. And I did spend some time in China this summer and Japan, and had a very interesting experience in working with people from other cultures with relationship issues. And I find that the seven natural laws of love do apply cross-culturally, but it's not quite, there's an interaction of the culture and the personality. And this is something that would help us all to get clear about is, you know, who are we really independent of the culture that we grew up in and the personality that we've developed. So there's not an easy way to make this distinction, but whatever your situation, it will serve you well to take a look at this.
Right, and would you have similar advice for, this is Shweta, who writes, I had a 4-year love affair separate because of his parents. What can I do? I can't seem to overcome the stress and the depression.
Yeah, well, this reminds me a bit of, and I imagine this is true in a lot of cultures, but what I really saw in Japan is that in the culture, the parents, particularly a man's mother, is actually a higher priority than his wife. And there are, I think, within the United States, there's so many different cultures that this may be true both in some subcultures as well as in some families where we have a man who hasn't really, or a woman for that matter, who hasn't really come into adulthood and really been able to create a state of psychological autonomy, even though they may be financially independent of their parents. And so there's nothing you can really do to change your partner. It's not possible. All you can do in a situation like this is to recognize that the root of the problem has to do with still being in the child role with a parent, and take a look yourself to see how you're dealing with that in your own life. Because if you handle it in your life, that's the best thing you can do. It's the only thing you can really do to further the possibility that your partner will handle that. You can mention it to them, but that's probably not going to be very effective. If they're not willing or able to become an adult and make their own decisions, then if you do that, either they will shift to catch up with you, or you'll attract another partner who is also coming from an independent place, not being the dependent child from mom and dad. And, you know, sometimes what I found is it may look like the partner is deferring to mom and dad, but at some level, this is actually what they're choosing. And so in order to avoid the blame, it may be passed off to mom and dad. But there's nothing you can do to change your partner. That's the bottom line. It's hopeless.
Right. One can only change oneself. And I was going to mention about, putting the blame on the parents. And I was, I think, inadvertently trying for years to get my husband to have an affair so that I would have a reason to leave.
Uh-huh.
But he never did. So I really had to be the first one to make things happen. But I kept thinking, well, gee, you know, if he takes the thing, then it wouldn't be my fault, quote unquote, that we got a divorce, that my parents would forgive me. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's great that you can become aware that that's what you were up to, because I think many people do these things without really being aware of it. Because it conflicts with, you know, I don't want to be that kind of person. I'm a good person, and we want to make the other person the bad person. And that kind of polarized thinking doesn't lead to more love. That's the bottom line. It's not that it's right or wrong or good or bad, but when we unconsciously create this kind of polarity. And I think this shows up a lot in relationships where one partner is really attached to having a monogamous relationship, the other one is really attached to having a non-monogamous relationship, and they get into these polarized positions. Or we see it in our politics all the time. It's all about polarity and good guys and bad guys, and it's only when we realize that we have all of these conflicting urges in ourselves, and if we resolve them within ourselves, then they kind of sort themselves out in the outside world.
Right. Probably a segue to the next question. This is from Sango, and she asks, "There is someone I like. I know him pretty well. He and I seem to have feelings for each other. But how can I get him to want me more than just pals or emails?"
Well, what I would recommend in a situation like that, and it's, again, flies in the face of a woman's conditioning to never be direct and to rely on indirect, manipulative tricks. That's what you have to do in a one-down position. But if you want to create a relationship of partnership and equality, the only thing to do in a situation like that is to honestly share what your feeling is. Not necessarily asking, or certainly not demanding that the other person share your feelings, but letting them know what you feel and maybe asking them, to take a look at, would you like to try this out?
Right, which probably scares a lot of people to be that direct.
Well, it is scary, and it's only scary what's going to happen? The thing people are trying to avoid, for the most part, is rejection.
Right.
And the thing is, if you're going to be rejected, if you're direct about it, and it's not you, of course, that's being rejected. You have to realize this. It's that your desire is being rejected, not you personally. And it doesn't You don't need to make that mean that you're lacking in any way. And to realize that it's not about you anyway. But however you're going to hold that rejection, however you're going to look at the fact of either getting what you want or not getting what you want, if you're direct about it, it's all going to happen a lot faster. If you're indirect about it, if you either try to drop hints or try not to say anything, it's going to take a lot longer. So if this guy is not interested and you're kind of waiting around for months and years to see if he's going to make a shift or take the hint, you've prolonged this uncomfortable situation, and you haven't freed yourself up for someone who might be attracted to you in that way. So personally, I think life is short, and I like to get on with it. But it's, you know, you can slow things down, and it's up to you.
I agree. I used to be the queen of subtlety, and nowadays I don't really care what anybody thinks anymore, so I'm just going to be direct because I don't like wasting time anymore.
And are you happier now, or were you happier before?
Oh, I'm much happier now.
So, right, that's the bottom line, is what is the result? What leads to more joy, more energy, more love?
Right, I've learned how to take rejection personally, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, being direct and speaking your truth, there might be some uncomfortable emotions in the short term, but in the long term, I think pretty much everyone will say, this is a much better life.
Yes. Here's a question from someone who didn't write her name. I believe strongly in the law of attraction and have attracted some amazing things into my life in the areas of school and career. However, I find that within the area of love, this law has proven far less abundant. Last year, I met the love of my life. We shared 7 wonderful months together, and I knew throughout the relationship that this was it. He was the one. I've never felt so sure about anything in my life. However, due to career circumstances for him, a new job created a busy schedule that was far too overwhelming to maintain a healthy relationship, so we broke up. I was quite saddened by this, as it wasn't a breakup due to either of us falling out of love with one another, but due to circumstance. And the guilt that he was feeling and constantly letting me down. My manifestation now is to bring this specific person back into my life. It's been almost 3 months that we've been apart with no communication, as I've respected his need to be focused and successful, yet I miss him so much. I want to believe that the universe will bestow happiness and love upon me, but I'm saddened that yet another relationship, and the one that means the most, has failed. My question is this: does the law of attraction work to attract a specific person back into one's life? I know we cannot control another person, but can the power of positive thinking help me reunite with the love of my life? Thank you.
Well, in a situation like this, to the extent that you can use the law of attraction, it would be about letting go. As so often happens between men and women, again, this is one of those polarities I was talking about, women tend to take the polarity that's about closeness and connection, and men tend to take the one that's about freedom and distance. So clearly here, this man is choosing the freedom and the distance, and she's holding the connection end. If she shifts out of that and really lets him go psychically, emotionally, she may have to do some grieving first, but to really let go and take more of the freedom end of the spectrum into herself, then that gives him the space, the law of attraction here. We call it like attracts like, but actually what she's wanting is balance. So she's going to repel him the more she tries to stay connected, or not tries, but continues to miss him and try to get him back.
That might be a tough pill to swallow. I've given that advice many times, and I'm sure it's not very popular.
Well, it's not very popular, but it's what works. And I would also, you know, in terms of her manifestation, to realize that what she wants is not so much this particular guy, but she wants a particular feeling and some qualities, not just in the person, but in the relationship. And so if she focuses on that instead of what's missing and instead of on an unavailable person, she may attract him back, but she may attract someone who has all of those qualities plus is available and wants to be connected.
Yes, excellent, excellent. I have a question here from Catherine. Catherine says, I feel so awkward about asking a stranger about how to solve my personal problems, but when I get a feeling of being confused and desperate, I'll take all the help I can get. You see, I've known about the law of attraction process for a few years, and I don't doubt its value. I've seen it in my work magnificently for my family and myself. I've managed to make it work, but only for small and very insignificant things. When it comes to creating the relationship that I want, however, I'm having problems. I created a very detailed list 3 years ago and still not have come close to finding who I want. I feel positive when I focus on my desires and the quality of my relationship that I expect, but I grow impatient after a month or so of seeing nothing that hints that I'm getting close to manifesting my desire, and then I start to feel bitter and depressed. I get that indulging in negative feelings is a big no-no in the realm of manifesting, but I find it so hard to stay positive when the things that I've wanted the most to achieve is being kept away from me. As I mentioned before, my list is detailed, and I know what character, personality, and physical traits I want in a partner. But the hardest thing now is getting a sense of when this will finally happen for me. I feel so deprived and cheated because I can so clearly visualize the person on my list, and he's an absolute joy. But bringing him into my reality has turned out to be a lot more tricky and stressful than I had imagined. Thanks for your help.
So this question, I think, is maybe the most common one that comes up, particularly for women. And the law of source is what really addresses this. The whole process of longing for love out there and then chasing after it and being disappointed, in terms of the law of attraction, this is going to bring more fruitless chases and more disappointment, and as she said, bitterness. And it's not surprising that this is what keeps being showing up in her life. The always solution is to turn that longing around. And instead of looking for it outside, find it within you. Now, a lot of people, again, just like trying to not be angry when you're angry, or trying to not judge when you're feeling judgmental, trying not to look for love outside and looking for it inside, trying doesn't work. It doesn't get the results. It's really coming to the realization that you have within you everything that you're looking for out there. And it's only when you find it and have a real visceral experience of finding that love inside that then that's what manifests on the outside.
And how does one start on that journey?
Well, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm promoting my own book, but reading the Seven Natural Laws of Love is a great place to start. There are exercises, there are ideas, there are practices that you can do to help you make that shift. And some people, you know, it may happen the first time. I've had that happen. I've given someone an exercise, they do it, and they get it instantly. For other people, really, depending on how much resistance there is, it may take some reprogramming. It may take some support and ongoing guidance. But the main thing is, I think, to shift from the fruitless search for finding love out there and change the direction of your search, and then to realize, to just drop the search and realize that your true nature is love. You already are that which you're looking for.
Right. That is so excellent and so true. And I know in my case, when I started manifesting the most amazing partners in my life, you know, some that are friends now and are not love partners, but was at that point where I was just so enjoying my life as a single person. I just enjoyed myself and I enjoyed my life, and it didn't really matter whether or not somebody came into my life as a partner, but it just seemed like it was raining people. It was raining wonderful people in my life at that point.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And you didn't say whether you did this, but you know, I think one of the problems in our culture is we put so much emphasis on the one, on the beloved, and it's really unhealthy. Whether or not that person is in your life, you still need to have other friends. You still need to have your own sources of nurturing. And so that's something concrete you can do instead of sitting there alone and lonely waiting for the beloved to show up, is to cultivate some friendships with men and with women.
Excellent. And and Dr. Deborah, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure that our readers and listeners can connect with you if they would like further guidance or do one-on-one you know, coaching with you. So where can they find you, or how can they find you?
Well, they can visit my websites. One of them, Seven Laws of Love, www.7lawsoflove.com, and the other, www.lovewithoutlimits.com. And both of these have excerpts from the books, a way to sign up for my monthly free email letter, and ways to find out what events are being offered, to set up individual coaching sessions with me. People can also phone me at 415-507-1739. But as I think you mentioned before, I'm going to be traveling out of the country for a couple of months, so email would be a better way to reach me, or on Skype, Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H dot Annapol on Skype. And I do read all the emails that come to me, and it may take a little longer while I'm traveling, but I do respond, so would love to hear from people who want more information or individual guidance.
Oh, that's great. And do they email you through your website?
They can, or they can email me directly, thanks for asking, at Taj, T-A-J, as in Taj Mahal, Taj at lovewithoutlimits.com.
Oh, that's fabulous. I want to thank you so much for spending the time today. I know you're preparing to take off out of the country, and I caught you just before, and it's been an amazing hour. We're just going to have you back on again.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a delight, and I'd love to talk again when I get back from my travels.
Awesome. Well, happy travels.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the end of the show, everyone. Until next time. And by the way, if you are on www.blogtalkradio.com/Dr. Karen, you will see that I've posted up the two books on the website, Dr. Deborah's books. So thank you again, Dr. Deborah. And until next time, everyone, bye for now.